What's up, founders? Welcome back to the Startup Founder Roadmap. I'm your host, Chris. In today's episode, we have Pat Cooper, a seasoned digital marketing strategist with a decade of experience helping brands redefine their marketing strategy to lower customer acquisition costs and accelerate revenue. Pat, welcome to the show.
Hey, Chris. Thanks so much for inviting me on.
So you have a lot of years in digital marketing and all of that stuff. When you hear digital marketing, what does that like mean to you? Because I get a lot of different terms in that now. I get a lot of definitions for that at this point, because I do podcasting. So people think podcasting goes into digital marketing. Like, I don't think it does. So what is digital marketing to you?
Yeah, digital marketing to me is anything that is customer or user centric online that connects a relationship from an end consumer to a brand. So any sort of interaction they're having, whether it's email, reading a blog content, maybe they're seeing a social media post, maybe they're listening to audio, so some sort of audio marketing. It's any sort of relationship building strategy that a brand uses.
Okay. I guess I'm wrong then. I'm not mad at that. Part of my content strategy for my clients, and even my shows, is the way you interview, right? Like, I think you should interview prospects. I think you should do interviews with your past clients. You want to use the podcast as a platform to really showcase all facets of your brand, not just chase celebrity interviews. So it kind of makes sense. I actually agree with you on that. I'm open to being wrong. I'm open to learning.
That's always good.
So you said that you did a lot of work in with Upwork. Like, what was that experience like?
Yeah, I mean, that experience is still going. It's how I started my career in digital marketing. I first got started in SEO and content marketing. So I joined the platform to advance my skill set, work with some new clients such as agencies. I've worked with probably about over a dozen agencies on Upwork so far. So I really got my start in content marketing, building out content for small to medium sized businesses. And that really just grew my skill set and evolved. And I went into paid media. I wrote some radio ads. I did some audio marketing. And it really just evolved my entire understanding of digital marketing. I've been on the platform for, I'd probably say, like 5 years now. I've made a little over six figures, probably close to like 200K now. And it's just a good experience. I recommend anyone that is new to marketing or they want to challenge a skill set that they're working on improving, whether it is marketing or web dev or design, not sponsored by Upwork, but Upwork does, you know, they do a great job of helping freelancers evolve their skill set. And this was, you know, way before I got my 9-to-5. This was when I was still in college. I joined the platform just because I wanted to build a portfolio and get moving in the business world.
Yeah, I think that kind of can help you speed up the process a bit. I think the earlier you can get into what you want to do, the better, especially at the bottom floor, like freelancing and stuff like that, because you just learn so much. Like for me in podcasting, I learned a lot about podcasting during that freelance phase. Like before starting an agency and building software, I had to start off with like doing the coaching calls and doing consulting and stuff. And I think that starting at that foundational level really sets you up to kind of stay around longer versus those people that kind of jump from industry to industry. Like that stuff just, I don't think it bodes well for trying to build wealth, in my personal opinion.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I work with a lot of students. I'm the former president of the American Market Association of the Boston chapter. So I get a lot of students that reach out to me and are like, I want to do this and that, but I don't know where to start or what to do. And I always say, do it. Just tap into the market. Like if you want to go into social media marketing, you know, build up some sort of small social media brand. Just kind of get your feet wet in the water and build up that experience. Don't wait for a handout or not a handout, but don't wait for an employer to come along and hire you. Free to learn those skills. Just dive in and learn those skills. Build up your portfolio. You're going to be able to scale and grow your career so much quicker that way.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think that's what a lot of startup founders should be doing in the digital marketing space specifically. From my perspective, it's best to find two strategies that you can like learn, that you like to do, and then execute those and go all in. So what's your perspective on digital marketing for startup founders? Let's say I'm the technical founder and I don't have a bunch of experience marketing or doing sales, but I know I have to market. Like, what's your advice to those people?
Yeah, so it's finding the right people for the job to market your startup. I've consulted with a lot of startups on Upwork. Anyone from, they've been a startup for, you know, 5-6 years, they're really focusing on building up their, you know, their engagement in the industry, and they're building up their profit and revenue margins, to very small startups, like they're just getting started. So they either, you know, try to have a super, super spread out approach and try to approach marketing way, way too fast, way, way too much, want to be on every platform, want to reach every customer, which is understandable. Startups have to make money. Or you're a startup that doesn't really want to go too hard into marketing. You really only want to do one channel. You really do have to find that nice little middle ground where you can reach the right people at the right time on the right platforms, and try not to overwhelm your consumers with a new idea or a new product that has just started its way into the market.
Yeah, I agree with that, man. Trying to be on every social platform, it sounds really good in theory. Exhausting. Like somebody like Gary Vee will tell you to do that, but Gary Vee also has a massive team. Yes. Like, it's not just him or one other person. It's literally, I think the last time I heard him mention it, it was over 200 people that work on just social media. So I don't think that if you have a small team or it's just you, you should be trying to be everywhere. Just get into one place. And I like to have a backup platform, and you just dominate those two and just focus on that. How do you help your, when it comes to startups, how do they choose the right platforms? I think that's a big question too. Like, if I am going to focus on social, how do I choose the right platform for that?
Yeah, so it's all about finding the right audience, right? Because it doesn't really matter, you know, what platform, what features do the platform have, what different ad products the platform had. It's more, it's where are those consumers? Where's your target market? So if you're focusing on maybe an older demographic, you're focusing a bit more on maybe Facebook or YouTube or something like that. If you're going for a younger demographic, it's more going to lean towards, like, say, Facebook Reels or Instagram Reels or TikTok or something that's going to be short form, you know, very, very short form content that's going to be really easy to watch and consume as a younger user. So it's a lot more about where is the person that you're looking to target, rather than, oh, hey, yeah, go on Facebook, go on X. That's where you're going to find people. Like, no, it isn't really. You really do have to follow where your target users are online.
Yeah, I agree. I think even the type of user, like for me, I found that the podcasters I want for one of my brands, Pod Central, for my software, it's like I could find podcasters on any platform, right? Like they're everywhere. Right. But there's a different type of podcaster that uses LinkedIn versus the one that uses Twitter and the one that uses Facebook. These are all different types of podcasters. So I think even taking the time to kind of research and go a layer deeper on the market, that will really help a lot, because I started getting way more conversions. And honestly, it was just easier when I was on LinkedIn. Like LinkedIn is my personal favorite social platform because I get the most clients on there, the most engagement, the most opportunities, best relationships. It all comes from LinkedIn. So for me, that's just I can't ever shut that one down. And I still post content on Instagram and Twitter. I'm still engaging there, but LinkedIn is kind of home base for me. So I do agree with you on the research side of things. Now, another question I have for you in terms of digital marketing is with SEO. When should a brand develop SEO strategy?
I think they should focus on that immediately. The way that a lot of marketers speak to paid media and organic media, such as SEO, is that paid media is such a short-term game, because no matter how much budget you put into it, no matter how great the ad creative is, as soon as you cut the budget, it's gone. Like that traffic you've been generating, it's gone because you are not spending money. Like ad markets are not going to be like, oh, well, you spent a lot of money, so we'll keep your ads running. That's not how the ad auction works. So I always recommend to the people I work with or the people I consult with, start first on organic. It's free traffic. I know it does cost money to work with SEOs and get the content built out, but the amount of traffic that you're getting and the domain authority that you're building is here to stay as long as you keep on building out that content. Especially with the platforms that you can leverage SEO on, Google, Yahoo, Microsoft, they're a lot larger than some of the paid social platforms that you may be tapping into for a paid media strategy. So it's always a big go-to when I speak to people that are unsure where to get started, just because the traffic is going to grow over time. And if you, say, stop doing SEO for a month, all your traffic isn't going to bottom out. You're probably going to maybe swing down a little bit, but you're going to maintain a lot of that growth.
Wow. Yeah, it seems like SEO is one of those things that should be at the top of the priority list, right up there with branding, just because that domain authority, like you said, is super valuable. Being even on the first page of Google, where people are constantly seeing your name, it's really helpful. I've gotten certain of my brands to that page before, and it's crazy the impact that it has. Like, you don't really realize it until you have like real life situations happen. Like, I had people come up to me like, "Oh, I've seen you before on Google or whatever." I'm like, "You saw me where?" Like, it's kind of mind blowing, to be honest, when you first get there. So you think that the startup should start the SEO strategy and build all that stuff out within like the first 6 months or a year or something like that?
Yeah, they should really get started within the first 3 months of launching their website. They should just focus on not only creating content that's really resourceful to search engines, but content that's really resourceful to their target audience. And a lot of that content can be repurposed for a paid media approach. So it's really dual facing there. Like, once again, like, SEO is going to be a process that takes, you know, easily 4 to 9 months to see really strong positive gains. But over time, it's going to lead to higher and higher gains over, you know, potentially what a paid media strategy can provide off the bat.
Okay. I love it. I love it. I love this, man. This is really good information, even for myself as a founder. Like, I'm working on so many different things. I'm always thinking, man, how long would it take for SEO to really give me some results? And I think that's one of the things that stops people from actually executing, is that thought of, man, this is going to take forever. I'm not going to get anything for the next year. You know, I think that stops a lot of people from starting. Plus, there's no real answer when it's like, okay, how often do I post? How long do they need to be? Do I need to have podcast episodes in there, YouTube videos? Like, it's so many variables that go into an SEO strategy.
Yeah, that's so true. I've talked to a lot of founders who, as soon as they hear, hey, we should expect to see results in 4 to 6 months, are like, wait. Wait a second. I want to see results now. And it's like, yes, I understand that. But, you know, getting on the first page of Google takes a lot of consistency and resources. So it does take time, but the payoff is well worth it.
Yeah, I agree. So I love doing this on my episodes now. I love doing the unpopular opinions, right? So I want you to give me a few unpopular opinions you have about digital marketing, right? It could be anything out there, whether it's about blogging or email marketing or ads or whatever. Whatever it is, I want just three unpopular opinions. Let's start with one. Let's go.
Okay. So the first one is something that's been circulating for quite a bit. And that's that email marketing isn't dead. It's really not dead. I know that a lot of marketers like to tap into kind of the newer things, the TikTok and the Reels and the YouTube Shorts, just because it's really fun. And no one really likes typing out an email, right? But the audience that you're building with that email marketing list is really strong, and usually the intent signals are very high. So I know it's a little unpopular, yeah, especially to some new marketers and some, ad managers that want to put their product first in front of, a free newsletter or free email list. But it's definitely a strategy that's going to be alive for a very long time.
Yeah, I don't think email marketing is going anywhere. I do think the format and the expectations might have changed a little bit, just because, yes, there's so many newsletters, there's so many email lists. Like, 5 years ago, if you put out an ebook to get somebody's email, they were excited to get that ebook and read it and like be on your list and stuff. Whereas now you're not going to generate any buzz off of that. So I do agree that it's still relevant. It's just changed a little bit. Okay. I agree with you on that one. Email marketing is not dead. That's part of my personal strategy for this book launch I got going later this year. So I hope it's not dead, right?
That's
a big part of my marketing strategy. Okay. What's your next unpopular opinion about digital marketing?
So another marketing vertical that's not dead is SEO. You'll see probably a lot on X and Instagram marketers talking about how, you know, SEO could potentially be dead over the next few years with AI and automation and how easy it is to build out content. You don't really need SEOs in place anymore. And that couldn't be further from the truth. You do need people in there managing content, and organic media matters so, so much. And although there are AI tools in use that, you know, automatically can whip out, you know, a piece of blog content in minutes, it's important to have SEOs and content marketers in there to build out really authentic content that's relevant to users. And, you know, no matter what algorithms Google is going to put out, you're always going to need some sort of SEO or search professional that's going to be optimizing a brand to have the widest approach and the widest domain authority on those search channels.
So wait a second. You said that you have to have an SEO expert to help you with the content. Like that's one of my personal questions when it comes to SEO is, what are like the basics of it? I know I need keywords, maybe some long tail keywords if I don't have a lot of domain authority, but like how often am I posting? How many words does it need to be? What makes the content more rich, as you said? Like what is all of that stuff?
Yeah, so it goes back to your audience. What does your audience need? What type of content do they want? Are they reading a lot? Are they maybe not reading so much? Do they prefer some short form content over long form content? I know that probably like 2 years ago, there was this huge debate about, you know, an article needs to be 1,000 words. You need this many links in it, but that's really not the game anymore. It all comes down to your end user and, you know, certain signals coming from Google too. So on top of keyword research, you're going to want internal links. So those are links that distributes content to each different part of your website. So if you have a blog post, maybe you have a link that goes to one of your services or one of your products or one of your content pages or another blog post. And then there's external linking. So showing authority that's distributed to other sources online. So if you're quoting something, you obviously need to link to that source in your quote or where you got that content from. And then there is also structured schema. So this is more back-end development work that tells Google, hey, this is what this is. This is a title. This is a meta description. This is a snippet of the text that can be used on search engines. And those signals are super important for Google so they can actually structure your content online in appropriate areas of their search engines.
Yeah, see, it's a lot of moving parts that go into SEO, and it makes sense why it takes so long. Yeah, it makes sense. Like when you explain it like that, it's so many layers and levels to it. Like it makes sense why it takes so long to see results. I completely understand that. All right, that's good. Okay, it's a really good unpopular opinion. What's your last unpopular opinion about digital marketing?
So I think my last one is that marketing education is not dead. That's not. I guess I'm on the trend of things aren't dead yet. So I think that there's a lot of experience you can gain from doing things yourself and learning things yourself, but I think there's still quite a bit of value in, getting a college degree and going to college. Now, this is someone who is a former college dropout that did go back to college. And I'm not saying you even like can't start your marketing career by, you know, skipping college. Like you can totally skip college and start your marketing career. But I think that there's a lot of value I got out of school, some core marketing concepts and marketing professors that I've connected with and just learned so much from, not even in their actual coursework, but what they do on their day-to-day. A lot of my professors worked for a lot of like Fortune 100, Fortune 500 companies, and I got so much value out of that. And being able to connect with now, you know, former colleagues of mine who I went to school with, and having that sense of community in the marketing world is super important, especially these days when you see so many layoffs across the marketing landscape and you see a lot of new technologies and strategies emerging. Having that sort of community that you built out in college is super important. And I think the college experience is going to change. I think that programs are going to change and how we approach education is going to change. And I would love for college courses to maybe even go into like starting startups within the college landscape. I think there's just so much to evolve with how people are learning marketing skill sets. So I think that that's one of my biggest takes. And that kind of goes into Gary Vee too, how, you know, a screw college, like forget college. But I think college still has, you know, some benefit. Yeah. Not everyone needs to go, but it does have some benefit.
Yeah, I think college is one of those things that you should go and do it if you're taking something that's serious. Like if you're going for a communications degree, I don't think that's really that of a good. Yeah, but like I think if you're going for digital marketing, anything in you know, this engineering space, things like that, I think that's perfect for college. I have children, so I plan on them going to college, or I want them to go, even if it's just honestly for the experience too. I think it helps you grow overall as a person. I'm not saying that people who don't go to college aren't, you know, good people or anything, but I believe you will evolve faster, you know, come into more of who you are as a person by just all the experiences you go through in college, like getting locked out of your dorm room or something, or failing a class because you just were too lazy. Or like you said, the relationships, that is just a game changer. Like it changes, again, that speeds up your progress of growth, because even if I want to be a graphic designer for Nike or something like that, like something very specific, I know a lot of people would say, don't go to college. You can learn graphic design on an online course. You can. They're right. But if you go to the right colleges, like I went to a Division III school in Portland, and Nike was on our campus. So if they Nike came to my campus at a D3 school, so I could like literally I was trying out their new basketballs they were coming out with. They just brought them to us like, hey, play with these and, you know, play a few games and see how you guys like them. Like, OK. And like Nike's right there. So if I was a graphic designer, I would have been in the perfect place to start climbing that ladder at Nike. So I think college can create a lot of opportunities. And do you think that all startup founders should go to college? Like, do you think that it'll speed up their growth as a founder? Or is it just for the people that want to kind of have skills and stuff like that?
I think maybe eventually, if you are a startup founder that hasn't gone to college. I mean, the great thing about startups is that they can happen at any time. You know, you can be fresh out of high school or in your senior year of high school and you can start up a company. Yeah. I mean, starting up a company is so darn easy these days. Like all you need is a laptop and a domain. And I mean, and obviously a service and a product, but you're good to go. It's really crazy how easy it is to start up new companies. So I think that it's smart for a startup founder to eventually find their way into the college space. Maybe not necessarily for the education, but maybe it's gaining connections and industry insights and building those relationships with those professors and peers that may ultimately really rocket their startup to where they want to see it in the future.
Yeah, man, I 100% agree, man. It doesn't have to be Stanford, and you know, it doesn't have to be those. It's great if it is, but if it's not, you should still go, because I just think it's going to force you to mature and look at the world a lot differently. Man, yeah, this was a great conversation.
Know, yeah, this has been fantastic.
I think we got to do a part two of this where we strictly like just talk about the processes of digital marketing. I want to do an episode that's literally just about like the company that's trying to get their MVP out there. Like what's a clear cut marketing process for them to get to that first 100 users. Like, I think that would be a really good episode because that's something I've personally been asked about a couple times. And it's something, if you Google that, the answers you get are, it's insane. It's such a wide variety, but none of them really, it doesn't speak to like, I'm a founder. I don't have $20,000 laying around. I didn't raise millions of dollars. I made my own thing and I want to sell it to people and I want to figure out how. That's it. Like a lot of it gets too up in the clouds sometimes. Like, I want to kind of simplify some more of this stuff.
I think having those frameworks are super important to scale businesses, especially something as simple as, oh, hey, I made something in the kitchen. I want to start selling it. And having that sort of framework in place to grow that kind of business is really great to have, because running a business can be a lot with, you know, legal and finance and marketing. It's really, encompassing and can completely take over your life.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Do you have any of those like frameworks for the digital marketing things that you deliver, like for SEO or for email marketing? Do you have your own frameworks that you go through with your clients?
Yeah, I do. Usually whenever I take in a client, it's first things first. Let's sit down. Let's talk about your goals, your KPIs, kind of set where you want to see yourself in 3 months and 6 months and a year, just so we can set some expectations, because you really can't get into the work before you know where your client wants to be. Then I run through an audit of their account, take them through the results, have them understand where they are in the market, where their competitors are, where they need to see growth to reach those KPIs and goals. And then we just break down everything channel by channel. Hey, you know, this is what you need to focus on for your organic growth in comparison to your goals. Here's what we need to focus on for paid media. Here's the CRM and relationship building with your customers that you need to focus on. So there are definitely at least a handful of pillars you need to focus on, but a lot of my clients just need to fully understand what channels, what strategies they need to be tapping into to actually reach those goals and KPIs that they want to be measuring against.
Okay. That makes sense. I love it. Well, guys, you heard it. Pat has a bunch of frameworks for you, a bunch of strategies. I'm definitely having Pat back on the show so we could dig into some other topics. Pat, welcome. Well, thank you again for being here. Let people know where they can find you and book that strategy session.
Thanks so much, Chris.